You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition. We're looking at opening day right around the corner for a division as interesting as any. The Cubs, probably the flavor of spring training this year in Arizona. But all the teams, like the other teams in the Central, they're playing catch the leaders with the Cardinals team that's been to the playoffs 4 years in a row and 11 of the last 15 years. The Pirates, two straight playoff trips, looking to try to knock off the Cardinals and go as a division champ this year. And the Reds and the Brewers, the window's closing. This is a big year for both of those teams, too. So it's going to be really great to get the season going and see what happens in the National League Central. St. Louis Cardinals edition, as always, joined by the fantastic Jen Langosch. Jen, how's beautiful Jupiter treating you?
Well, thanks for calling me fantastic, first off. And Jupiter is lovely, as usual.
Well, I know it is. It's been a crazy warm Florida spring training, hasn't it? I just completed my two-week tour of camps. I wound up in Fort Myers, but, man, they had the oven set at broil, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's here. It's been consistent mid-80s, I would say, since the beginning of March, maybe even into those late days of February. So certainly no complaints about the weather down here. I do hear that it's a little bit nicer back in St. Louis these days, so hopefully spring is heading north as well.
Oh, I want to giggle, Jen. I came home from Florida last night. I'm in Chicago. I'm looking at my window at blowing snow. So don't forget to bring a couple extra layers when you come here for opening day.
Well, certainly. I'm sure I'll need a winter coat. It usually works out that way, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we look at the Cardinals team. Most teams, when you talk about their starting rotation late spring, you're talking about how are they going to find a fourth starter, a fifth starter. The Cardinals seem to have had a really good situation this spring, even after dealing away Shelby Miller. Pitching depth has been a strength in the day-in, day-out most interesting thing, the competition for those five starting jobs. So how is it looking now as we get we're just about a little less than 2 weeks from that opener at Wrigley? What is the fight for the spots at the bottom of the rotation?
Yeah, I mean, there are really, you know, still three guys fighting for that final fifth rotation spot. I mean, I think, you know, in terms of the top end of the rotation, the last week has been really good development-wise for the Cardinals. Adam Wainwright got back on the mound. Lance Lynn got back on the mound. John Lackey is now pitching every fifth day, so certainly a good sign there. And then when it comes to that fifth rotation spot, you know, Carlos Martinez, Marco Gonzalez, and Jaime Garcia are still very much in the mix. You know, the easy move for the Cardinals would probably be to start Marco in AAA. He has options available. It would keep him as some starting depth. It's a little more complicated when you talk about Carlos Martinez and Jaime Garcia. Jaime, because he's making close to $10 million this year, he's a guy who has proven himself to be a very effective left-handed major league starting pitcher. But is he going to be healthy? And, you know, so far this spring, he's answered yes to that question. You know, the trouble for the Cardinals is that durability going to be there, you know, beyond February and March and into the season, into the summer, and then into the fall? And it's not necessarily a question that anybody knows the answer to, but he's pitched really well. And then Carlos Martinez is the guy that they thought was probably going to win that fifth rotation spot. He, too, has pitched well, but does he fit best there? Does he fit best in the bullpen? Is he a guy the Cardinals would want to get stretched out down in AAA to be in waiting? Those are still questions to be determined. So, you know, right now the Cardinals are in a little bit of a bind in that they're losing innings in Grapefruit League play that they can give to all these guys, and you can't go with the seven-man spring rotation for forever. So, you know, at this point we're seeing a couple of the guys piggyback some of the other starters. We'll see Jaime Garcia pitching in a minor league game on Tuesday to get his innings count. But that evaluation is still ongoing. And at this point, it looks like it's a decision that's probably not going to be made until the final week of camp.
Well, one reason it is such a difficult decision is there's only that one job out there. Michael Wacha, I would think of all 30 teams, I don't know if anybody that went to a camp was a player that had some question about him and was answered as affirmatively as Wacha has. As we talk, I looked up his numbers. Fourth lowest whip in Major League Baseball right now. 9 strikeouts, no walks in his first 9 2/3 innings of spring training. I mean, the Cardinals just have to be out of their minds excited about what they're going to get from Michael Wacha.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you consider that he kind of came into camp as their projected fourth starter. I mean, think about how many teams would love to have Michael Wacha as a fourth starter in their rotation. Yeah, and I know we talked a couple podcasts ago about the downward tilt that we're seeing with his pitches again. You know, that's been something that's really caught the Cardinals' attention and really kind of looks like the Michael Wacha of 2013. I think we're at the point where we can stop talking about the health questions. I mean, this is a guy who did come back and pitch the end of last season. While he didn't pitch very well, he did pitch healthy, and he showed no issues with the shoulder injury again this spring. So, you know, while it's an injury that needs to be monitored going forward, I don't think it's one that the Cardinals are very concerned about cropping back up this year. So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned he answered any questions affirmatively. Absolutely. He's had a great spring. He's kind of gone a little bit under the radar here, which he's okay with after the last couple, you know, last spring, certainly being the opposite of that when he was coming off a tremendous postseason. But, again, to have a guy like Michael Wacha slotting into your fourth rotation spot, it talks about the depth that this Cardinals rotation has.
Well, the first baseman from Slippery Rock, Matt Adams, still looking, as we speak, still looking for his first spring training home run in an A game. But you wrote the other day something he's been doing more and more of, trying to beat that shift. That I don't know if the shift has kind of gotten in his head, but he's certainly been hurt by the shift the last couple of years. And what's he been up to?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's talked about a couple of things on that regard. I mean, he did talk about how it did get in his head a little bit last year and that, you know, he might have slapped some singles to left to beat the shift instead of trying to drive the ball as, you know, the type of player that he is. So a couple of things this year. I mean, one, he wants to drive the ball a little bit more regardless of the shifting done against him. I mean, that's how he's going to create some damage in the middle of the order. And the other thing is working on the bunting. Do I think we're going to see Matt Adams bunt a lot this year? No, I don't. But, you know, the ability to be able to do it, to potentially surprise a team a time or two, can be an advantage to him. I mean, he can get him on base first off, and then it also puts it in clubs' heads that if he's capable of doing it, you know, maybe they can't shift him as dramatically. So, you know, he's worked on it a lot in the side here in spring. He tried to execute a couple in a game last week. Didn't go well, and then he ended up striking out in the at-bat, which was frustrating to him. But, you know, again, it's something that Mike Matheny has really impressed upon Adams to try to do. It's something that Matt is trying his best to learn how to do. But I think we also have to remember that this is a guy who's never been asked to bunt in his career. He had no bunt hits, no sacrifice hits as a professional player. He had one in college. So, again, we're not going to probably see him try it very often. But if he can lay down one or two and get something going, certainly it's a benefit to him and to the team.
Well, I know a guy who's going to get a lot of playing time down the stretch is going to be John Jay, who did not get in a Grapefruit League game until March 20th. Plenty enough time to get him the at-bat so he'll be ready to go, or is it going to be a bit of a cram course?
Yeah, I mean, he is going to get a lot of at-bats here down the stretch, but there seems to be no concern about the timing and his ability to be ready for the season. So, you know, the good news is for him, while he didn't get into Grapefruit League games until, as you mentioned, about two and a half weeks in, he has been swinging, you know, since he got here to spring training. Fielding-wise, he's been involved in all the outfield work, so that's not an issue. He's been base running, you know, so conditioning-wise, he's just fine. It was just a matter of slowly building up that swing in the cages and a little bit on the side just because he got a later start to his work this offseason because of the wrist surgery. So he'll get a bulk of at-bats. From here on out, he was actually one of the, you know, the few veteran guys who is doing both legs of the Sarasota game yesterday and the Fort Myers game today, which, again, is indicative of the Cardinals just wanting to get him some game at-bats. And, you know, the other thing that doesn't show up in any of the box scores, but he has been out here taking some extra at-bats against minor league pitchers, against pitchers throwing simulated games. So he's seeing the live pitching. And, again, there seems to be no reason why he shouldn't be ready on April 5th.
Well, that's awesome, Jen. Thank you very much. Pittsburgh Pirates edition, as always, joined by Tom Singer, man about town in beautiful Bradenton. Tom, how you doing? Is it kind of sad to see this spring training starting to wind down?
Things are going well. I mean, you know, we still have about more than a couple of weeks to go, but you know, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And as the saying goes, we hope it's not a freight train.
Yeah. Absolutely. And right off the bat, I'm going to ask you about the guy that hasn't been on the field in about 10 days as we speak, and it doesn't look like he's going to be there in a few days, so maybe out a couple weeks at the middle of spring training. Andrew McCutchen only has 12 at-bats. It looks like you guys got a little clarity the other day on the extent of his injury. Can we say he's battling knee problems now instead of lower body problems? What's your take on his overall health?
Well, the official word still is lower body problem. He did have an ice pack on his left leg, and most of the ice seemed to be around the knee. But nobody's really zeroed in. When I say nobody, officially the club hasn't zeroed in on exactly what he's battling. He's not in baseball shape, but I mean he's in good shape. When you see him walking around the clubhouse, he's not impaired in any way. So whatever he's dealing with, pretty subtle, and in a general sense, you know, still lower body. You know, your left knee is part of your lower body, so I suppose perception that it's mainly a knee problem may be correct, but nobody seems to be particularly concerned, mainly because overall he's got his health and actually seems to be in fine shape, but as I said, not in the game shape, and that's what he's still trying to reach. The word is that we will see him at some point this week. It's a long week. Could be at the end of the week, which would put him only about 8-10 days before opening day. So we'll see how it develops, and we'll see how he looks when he does come back.
Well, the Pirates have certainly been playing fine without him. You know, you don't get too caught up on the spring training record, but the Pirates have been able pretty consistently to keep themselves on the winning side of the spring training record, the Grapefruit League, and really day in, day out playing good games, not scoring a lot of runs, but between their pitching and defense, not giving up many runs. How satisfied would you say Clint Hurdle is with how his team is looking at this point?
He is very satisfied. You know, everybody has the dog days, you know, when they're just not playing a competitive ball. They had one of those against the Astros recently. But overall, he's really pleased with the tight games they've been playing, getting into that one, you know, every pitch counts mentality. And even though they've been playing good ball, as you said, it's interesting. We haven't seen anything close to what their regular lineup would be because regulars are still only playing every other day. And I kind of chatted up Jordy Mercer on that recently, and he said there's still plenty of time, but they are looking forward to getting the regular team out there just to see what how they click together. And obviously, as we get closer to opening day, without question, the regulars would start playing it every day, not just every other day. And the one reason they haven't missed McCutchen's performance is Starling Marte has moved over into center field, and just like last season, for whatever reason, he seems to be a lot more productive when he's playing center field, and he's really been the one outfielder who's been carrying his load. He's looked very good.
Well, and looks like he's been doing everything. He's even 4-for-4 with stolen bases. Do you think Marte, does his overall talent level kind of get overshadowed by McCutchen? You think if he was playing for another team, might he be a guy that people would be talking about more, that it's just there's not enough spotlight to move over from center field to left field?
Well, without question. I mean, any of the other Pirates kind of get lost a little bit in Kutch's shadow, and rightfully so. I mean, Kutch is not only the face of this team, but he's one of the premier faces of baseball, without question. He's the guy everybody wants to talk to, and that's why there's so much interest in his well-being. But I think Marte will claim his own space going forward. He had a very strong second half of the 2014 season and seems to be picking up right where he left off. So I think this will be his third year. I think it'll be a real breakthrough season for Starling Marte, without question.
Well, the Pirates traded Travis Snyder to open up right field for Mr. Gregory Polanco, thinking with a clear spot for that job that he will step forward and thrive this season, which he has pretty much done at every level except the major leagues. It hasn't been a very good spring for Polanco. Is there any concern about his confidence or his level of play as we head into the really serious part of spring training?
I don't believe so. It could be a classic case of not only spring training not really counting, but even just stats in general could be deceiving. The last 2-3 days, he's hit a lot of balls right on the nose, you know, to the warning track. So he's definitely getting his timing down. He's getting good cuts. And even though it doesn't show up in the stat line, but I'm sure that's helping his confidence. The last 2-3 times he's played, he's really hit everything on the nose.
All right, perfect. Tom, thank you very much. Milwaukee Brewers edition, as always, joined by Adam McKelvey, I believe the mayor of Maryvale, they're calling in these days. How you doing, Adam?
I don't know if that's a title I want, so I'm ready for the regular season.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're the mayor of Maryvale, you always have some stadium issues to negotiate. So, you know, you're a guy with time on your hands, so why not?
Well, the owner was there this week, and this topic came up again, and it's something the Brewers are looking at. They would love to be in a better location. But, again, this problem, Phil, and you know this, Maryvale's great once you're there. When you're inside the gates, it's a beautiful place. They have their own run of the place. They want a little more clubhouse room, a little more office area. But, I mean, the field itself is terrific. So that's kind of the dilemma they face. Is it worth trying to go out and find a different facility when the one they've got from a practical standpoint is pretty usable?
Yep, absolutely. They have the beautiful omelets, though, that get cooked in that clubhouse. That caught my eye earlier this spring.
You know who ate those omelets? Is Hank the dog ate those omelets last year. That's how he got all big and quote-unquote fluffy.
Oh, okay. Good. That's a good taste tester. Now on to the actual Brewers squad. The biggest move in the last week since we've talked to you is the Ron Rennecke extension for 2016, taking away the lame duck status. But that kind of puts the spotlight on Doug Melvin, who is a lame duck. I'm not sure why that should be less of an issue for the GM to be in that boat than the manager. What do you make of Doug Melvin's situation? How much under the gun do you see him being with this 2015 team?
Well, Doug addressed this, Phil, and he says it just is not as important for him to have the same sort of security for two reasons. Number one, it's different as a general manager than a manager in terms of the impact that this has inside the clubhouse. It can be an issue, a distraction for a team if the manager doesn't have any security, if he's a lame duck, and the Brewers wanted to eliminate that as an issue, so they did. The other thing is Doug Melvin says, just look at our careers. We're in different places. Ron Rennecke is entering his fifth year as a big league manager. Doug Melvin has 20-plus years as a GM, and he's just secure enough, he said, that it doesn't bother him. He doesn't worry about it. It made me wonder whether he's nearing the end of the line. He'll be 63 this year. He's done this a long time, a lot of pressures. And he indicated that he still loves the job. He loves the challenges that running a small market team presents. He still loves baseball, which is fundamentally the most important thing. And he indicated, at least in our little chat, that he wants to keep doing this. So I think that's one thing that we can kind of take off the table. And I'm guessing eventually the Brewers will address this and just take this issue off the table as well. But Doug Melvin made it very clear that he's not worried about it.
Hey, speaking of Doug Melvin, looking at his legacy, I mean, here's a great baseball man that was front office guy for the George Steinbrenner Yankees, survived that, went to the Texas Rangers, really did some good franchise building there, and has had a long, successful run with the Brewers. How would you categorize Doug's legacy with the Brewers? How much credit does he get for these playoff teams and 3 million attendance teams that the Brewers have had in the recent past?
I mean, I hope he gets credit, Phil. They haven't won a World Series, and there's a segment of the fan base that isn't going to be satisfied until you do that. But you know, oftentimes when a GM takes over a team that's down, and remember when Doug took over this team, they were on their way to 106 losses in 2002, worst season in franchise history. They talk about changing the culture, wanting to create a winning culture. And that's what he did, to the point where when they have a down year, like last season where they collapsed late, it hurts these fans a lot more than it would have a decade ago, a lot more than it would have pre-Doug Melvin, because they've raised the expectation level to the point where they expect to get to the postseason every year and to win in the postseason. And that's a change from where this franchise was at before he came in. And I think he does deserve some credit for it. The owner, Mark Adnasio, came in after Doug Melvin, kept him on board, and they've developed since then a level of trust where I think they have a – my understanding of their working relationship is that it's really strong. And, you know, I think, again, I just feel like Doug Melvin deserves a lot of credit for taking a franchise that was a perennial loser and turning them into at least a team where the expectation is there to compete.
Well, he'll always have that C.C. Sabathia trade that seemingly came out of nowhere,
well,
and certainly made some big moves.
He's probably more on the conservative end, Phil. If you were to rank the GMs from aggressive to conservative, he probably falls more on the conservative side. But there are some deals that really run against that, and C.C. is one. Zach Greinke was an all-in move. At that same offseason, they traded for Sean Markham. That combination of deals got them within two wins of the World Series. I mean, he's made some very aggressive all-in type moves, and it's cost them in terms of prospects, and it's cost them in terms of the rankings of their farm system. But it's also gotten them some wins. The 2008 postseason appearance snapped 26 years without making an appearance in the playoffs. And that was a big deal for this franchise, obviously. So he's the other thing I think he'll be remembered of, and Phil, this is, you'll know because of your dealings with him, is he's one of baseball's great people persons. And Doug has said that his favorite thing about baseball is the people. And I think he'll be remembered for that. He treats people right. He's, you know, this is a business, and it can be a brutal business sometimes. But you are hard-pressed to find a player to say he was treated badly by Doug Melvin. And I think that's a legacy, too.
And and along those lines, I think Doug is a classic guy that he'll take character over talent. You know, he won't take the crazy talented guy when you know, if he doesn't back it up by being a good person, too. Looking at what maybe Doug's most recent trade, it looks like this spring – no immediate results from that Yovani Gallardo trade. Sardinas, kind of not a great spring, and Corey Knebel already sent out to the minor leagues. But I'm wondering if there's from minor league camp, they're hearing much talk about Marcos Duplan, the 19-year-old that was in that trade, because I think he's going to be the big piece.
Well, he was a guy the Brewers liked a lot and, you know, could end up being the best player when it's all said and done. Our Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com was over in minor league camp earlier this spring, and Duplan was over there with a mini camp that they had going on, and Jonathan loved his arm, said he was mid to upper 90s, looked like he was going to be a really good one. A young guy, though, and the Brewers have seen with some of their own that you have to be very, very patient with those guys. Willie Peralta is a great case, a guy who signed for a big bonus, big expectations, and it took him a long time down in the Dominican and then progressing through the minor leagues before he got up, and he struggled in the big leagues before kind of having a breakthrough in the last two seasons. So that was one of the interesting things talking to Doug Melvin the other day about just the nature of his job is the patience that it takes. I mean, even if Doug gets an extension, he's probably not going to see Duplan pitch in the big leagues. I mean, we're talking about a project that's going to be a lot of years in the making. And that's kind of an interesting thing. You're running a team and you're trying to win now and you're trying to build for the future, even if you're not going to be part of that future. And it's one of the challenges that GMs face.
Yeah, absolutely. Cincinnati Reds edition, as always, joined with Mark Sheldon from Goodyear, Florida. Mark, you about ready to get this spring training wrapped up and get on to the regular season?
I am, Phil, and I think you are, too. You just said I was in Goodyear, Florida, so we're off to a flying start.
Yeah, that's me. I go to Arizona, I go to Florida, and frequently I do forget where the heck I am. So, yeah, good catch on that. We look at the Reds team, and, you know, it's a team that has, you know, done probably what most teams want to do in spring training, you know, just kind of hung in there. It hasn't been red hot. It hasn't been cold. It's just been, you know, kind of guys getting their work in, relative health. One development this week that caught my eye was Homer Bailey back on the mound throwing in a minor league game through two scoreless innings. What's the situation with Homer? It looks like it's going to be tough to make that up, make up the time that he's missed, but they got to be encouraged that he's on the mound and looked good that first time out.
Yeah, he looked good, and it seemed like they were happy. He was happy with the outing, and, of course, most importantly, he didn't feel any injury-type related issues. The progression this whole time has been smooth, relatively speaking. There's been no setbacks. He's thrown five bullpen sessions. He threw one live batting practice. His second live BP was scratched because he had a stomach virus. I guess that was his only hiccup of camp. And then he advanced to the facing some AAA hitters against the Indians the other day. So now it looks as though he'll get another start in 5 days, most likely a big league game, but not definitely. And then he'll most likely begin the season on the disabled list and miss up to possibly two starts. And they feel pretty good about that right now and that he can join the rotation at that point and then pick up where he left off.
Well, we were talking last week about the biggest unanswered question in camp being that the makeup of the pitching staff, you know, spots at the end of the rotation and a lot of competition for the bullpen jobs. In the time since then, who's really kind of stepped forward to, if not on paper, nail down a job, but look like he's going to move into some of those openings?
Well, it's been interesting. I took some time off, and while I was out, Tony Cingrani was told he was going to the bullpen. Paul Mulholland was told if he was going to make the team, it was going to be out of the bullpen. Before I left, they sent down David Holmberg and Dylan Axelrod, and you start looking at the names and the process of elimination, and you see, you know, once you take away Homer Bailey, you see five guys for five spots. And what you have left is you have Jason Marquis, you have Raisel Iglesias, and you have Anthony Desclafani. And they're not saying that's the rotation. Brian Price has kind of left it open that there could be some changes. Michael Lorenzen's going to get a start later this week, so maybe he's a chance to sneak in there. But Iglesias has been an interesting case because he's had some up and down outings, but when he's been good, he's been really good. So it's going to be interesting to see what he can do, because the other day he got kind of a little bad with his mechanics and was hit around a little bit and against Oakland, and then that was in the first inning, gave up a home run, and then the rest of the outing, he retired 8-9 and looked unbelievable. So I think he's really stood out. I think Lorenzen stood out, except for the fact that his last outing he did have six walks in two innings, so that wasn't too good. But overall, he's had a nice camp. And Desclafani has been pretty smooth for the most part. He's had some hiccups later in his outings where he gives up a two-out walk or a two-out hit and doesn't get out of an inning as clean as he should. But he's had a pretty good camp, too.
It has been a pretty, solid, healthy camp, but a couple of minor injuries, relatively minor injuries. Billy Hamilton running into that wall and bruising his shoulder, and Devin Mesoraco's concussion early in camp. Are those guys going to be on kind of a overtime program as the as spring training winds down to try to make up some of those game appearances that they missed during the middle of camp?
Yeah, they haven't been held back at all since then. As you know, a very popular device for spring training, especially for veterans, is to go over to the minor league side and get at bats in games. And Hamilton actually did that in the game that Homer Bailey pitched. And one of the great advantages of those games is they can control the rules themselves. And a guy like Hamilton can lead off every inning if they want him to, and he can get six, seven, eight at bats. Joey Votto, who got a little bit of a slight late start getting into games, went over to the minor league side recently and got seven at bats. So you know, Mesoraco can do that, and he probably has done it and will do it, and other guys will do that where they can get the extra bats they need and catch up so they have the repetitions and have they're seeing the ball pretty well.
Hey, one guy I hear, not just from Reds people, but from scouts who go around and watch the Reds, that has just been on fire all spring is Brennan Bosch. And Marlon Byrd also having a very good spring. Byrd's pretty much an everyday sort of guy, right? So how would they figure out, how would they use, what is the pleasant surprise that Bosch has been in camp, you know, left-handed bat, Byrd right-handed, but if Byrd's going to get all those at-bats, how will they use Bosch when April comes around?
Well, that's if he makes a team. He's been a nice surprise. He did tail off the last couple of days, so I don't think he's necessarily got the spot yet, but he does look pretty good for it. The other guy that's kind of challenging him, and maybe they both make it if there's a scenario that works out, is Chris Dominguez, a right-handed power hitter who's been a very nice surprise here. I think for both of those guys, it's not a question of them taking time away from Marlon Byrd or Jay Bruce or even Billy Hamilton. It's just they're going to be complementary pieces that are going to be called on to come off the bench, especially in the late innings when they need a pinch hitter, they need a power, they need a three-run homer. Those are the types of guys they didn't really have much of other than Chris Heisey last year. They really had a power depleted bench. So I think if Brennan Bosch can be that guy, he did hit 25 homers in AAA last year. He's left-handed. He can do those kind of things, and he can play all three outfield positions, and they've given him some time at first base. So if Joey Votto, for whatever reason, needs a break, that's a spot maybe he can step in as well. So right now it's going to be interesting see how that bench shakes up. They have a lot of outfielders between Bosch and, of course, the three regulars. You also have Skip Schumacher, who can play center field, left field, and right field. You have Chris Negron, who can play all three outfield positions and three infield positions. So they have a lot of outfielders right now.
Hey, last question, I'll let you go. Obviously, a lot of talk around baseball about Pete Rose, has applied to Rob Manfred to be reinstated. And I hear this national assumption that if he could be reinstated, he would be working for the Reds. And I'm just not that clear on what his relationship is with the Reds at this point. How would you characterize that?
Well, of course, he's not allowed to have any relationship with the Reds under the subject of the rules. And the Reds are very, very they dance very delicately around them. They don't want to do anything to upset Major League Baseball. But at the same time, it's not like he's never around. He's as a ticket holder, he's been to maybe 5 to 10 games a year. The last few years I've been on the beat, and every time he is at the game, the Jumbotron seems to find him, and he gets a standing ovation. And I know some players at times have said that they've had encounters with Pete. I know Joey Votto has been one, and Todd Frazier is another one, where they've talked hitting and they've gotten some advice, and they both thought he was very generous with his time with them. So there's no formal relationship, but there's been kind of an informal thing where he's still connected with the team. He still has ties to Cincinnati. He and his wife appear in some local furniture commercials, and he appears at the local casino, I think, occasionally. We'll see what happens if he's ever reinstated, but I would never expect that the Reds are going to really at this time lobby one way or the other or get involved with the process.
All right, thank you very much, Mark. Chicago Cubs edition, as always, joined by Kerry Muscat. Kerry, how's Mesa doing? Have you enjoyed your time out there this spring?
Yes, especially whenever my husband tells me that it's snowing back in Chicago. Yeah.
Yes, there's always that, and you won't have to worry about that until, I don't know, maybe opening day. Maybe we'll get some
maybe
good weather.
Maybe April 5th, right, yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
No.
Kerry, even though Chris Bryant continues to just kill the ball and a number of the other young Cubs having really good springs, I think the issue that has people on edge now is the John Lester tired arm. I know Lester says it's nothing to be that concerned about. It's just kind of a part of getting ready for a season. Are you buying it? Do you think John Lester will be in good shape to make that opening day start a week from Sunday?
I'm not worried about it, and I would guarantee you that probably 100% of the Cubs are not worried about it either. You look at some of the other pitchers in spring training, and there's always that one start where they just doesn't look right. And I think the so-called dead arm phase is normal for spring and normal for somebody like him.
Well, and it certainly hasn't been a dead team phase as we're talking on this podcast. The Cubs, after their slow start, have gotten back to .500, won 8 of their last 10 games, scoring a ton of runs. What's been the most impressive thing to you? Is it just kind of the hitting up and down the lineup that's allowed them to play so well over the last week and a half or so?
Well, they do rank second in the majors right now with home runs, and Joe Maddon has said that it seems that he's managing an American League team more than a National League team, because there really isn't any speed on this team at all. So the hitting has been fine. It's just you look at the stats and you see, wait a minute, Anthony Rizzo, Starlin Castro, they haven't hit a home run yet, and it's already pretty late into the spring. We've got short time left. But I don't think they're too worried about those guys. It's the offense could be really good. I'm not so sure they're able to do the little things, which is something that Joe would like to stress. So that's kind of still developing, but they can mash the ball, especially Bryant.
Hey, this is a totally different thing, and I apologize if it catches you off guard a little bit, but looking at the numbers, they've been running and stealing some bases, and they've been shutting down the opponent's running game. This caught my eye, that opponents have only stolen 8 bases, as we talked, or did steal 8 bases in their first 15 tries, which, as we talked, is the fewest stolen bases allowed in the major leagues. Has that been a particular point of emphasis or anything to really point to other than the fact that they have at least 3 quality catchers that have been in that mix?
No, I think I've seen teams running. I know Wellington Castillo's had a pretty good spring. I'd have to look at the stats to see how many guys that he's thrown out. He looked really really good behind the plate defensively. They're really trying to emphasize that element of it. It could be also, as you know, it could just be that maybe they've got the pitchers that are throwing a little quicker to the mound. They've tried to speed up guys like Edwin Jackson, who teams would run on quite a bit. They've tried to speed up Travis Wood's delivery a little bit, and as you know, it's kind of a combo. It's not just the catcher, it's the pitcher too. So that could be playing a part in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at some of the guys we don't talk about all the time. One guy that I don't know that this name, you might have brought him up once, but a guy that very impressive prospect, doesn't get a lot of love because he's a little further behind the guys that are right on the cusp. Albert Almora, seems like he's had a fabulous spring. How do you look
He got some playing time because he got some extra playing time because Matt Caesar was out with a sore ankle, so they let Almora start a couple games, and he really took advantage of it. And that's really good for me to see. He was always projected as one of the so-called core four with Soler and Bryant and Baez, and he hasn't progressed as quickly as the other three. And I think this could be a really big year for him. He had some personal issues. His father was very ill last year, battling cancer, and that seems to be under control. And so he can focus on baseball, and that's a very good thing.
Hey, speaking of battling cancer, there are a number of players and the manager in that camp that are bald as we speak. What's up with all the bald heads people are going to see if they tune in and catch the Cubs on TV this week?
Well, I know these guys need to watch out and get some hats and sunscreen because they were a little exposed yesterday. Joe Maddon wanted to hold a fundraiser to raise awareness and also money for pediatric cancer research. And so they had a Respect Bald event where for $100 you could get your head shaved and a T-shirt and the chance to feel good about something and know that you're helping other people out. And it was really, I was surprised at the turnout. There were a lot of players that told me they weren't going to do it, and then at the last minute they did, and that's impressive. We were kind of glad to see that Rizzo got it done because he sort of colored part of his hair bright blonde, and I'm kind of glad those blonde locks are gone. but it was for a good cause. Joe would like to think that this is his last haircut for the year, because he claims that probably about June it'll be back to sort of normal, but I have a feeling his wife will have him get a haircut at some point down the road. But really, really nice turnout. I believe they raised more than $12,000 for the event, which is really terrific. And on Saturday, the Cubs' wives had hosted a mystery ball event and fundraiser, and they raised $15,000 for that. So, thanks to all the Cubs fans out there who have been really generous and give back. I do know that probably a lot of guys, their batting helmets felt a little looser after they had their heads cut, especially guys like Chris Coughlin. He had all these curls, and now they're gone. And Justin Groom wasn't going to do it, and at the last minute he caved and to the pressure. And it's part of Madden's effort to kind of get guys to go step out of the box, do something, take a risk, and also to make them feel good about something. So,
thanks for listening. This has been Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition, for our five beat writers. Thanks very much. We'll see you next time.